On page 50, we are getting closer and closer to the end of this particular book. He talks about providence. When we look at people today, there is, even in the church, sometimes not that great of an understanding when it comes to providence. If you've looked through the material, anybody want to offer for us a general definition of providence? What is it? When we think about God working, when we look at the Old Testament, we have miracles. God did various things. When people needed food, bang, it was right there. When people needed to be delivered from Egyptian bondage, God opened up the Red Sea. When we think about people returning from the dead, there was no process. It was instantaneous. Miracles, not very difficult to define them. An instant act that supersedes natural law. It's just bang and there it is. But when we think about providence, we're still talking about an act of God. But rather than the miraculous activity, with providence, what do we have? Is God still working? He's still working, but now his work is sort of behind the scenes. It's not as visible, it's not as clear, and in many cases, it's not going to be that instant supernatural activity. He's still going to be involved. And when we think about providence, this is one of the areas where it comes to some difficulties when it comes to faith. If we were, you know, out at the river and we saw God part the river, or we saw God do some other things as far as feeding thousands of people, we'd say, well, okay, I've seen that, and I've got faith that he has the ability to do that. But when it comes to believing that God can work behind the scenes, especially when we think about some of the things that we pray for, when we have someone who goes to the hospital, we've seen a recent example of that with the heart surgery, we pray for that particular person. Are we thinking in miraculous terms? No. I mean, we're not thinking that the surgery is going to be avoidable. We're not thinking that the surgery is going to be something that, you know, within a minute he's going to or she's going to recover from instantly and be back to the normal self and even better. But when we think about providence, we're praying for healing, but we recognize with that that there's going to be a process. It's going to take some time. Several things are going to be involved with that. When we pray for a lot of other things as well, we have people who are looking for employment. We have people who are searching for the basic necessities of life. Providence is what we're talking about in these sets of circumstances. And this is where we have to have faith. And that's one of the points that the writer tries to drive home tonight. All right, page 50. He says the word providence has in it the word provide. That's what we're talking about, God providing. So when we think of the providence of God, we are thinking of the various ways in which he provides for his people. We can rightly say that providence is the care or the benevolent guidance of God. If we want to be people who believe in providence, that's right, but we've also really got to have faith. And this is, like I said, where the rubber meets the road, because a lot of times people say, God can probably do something, but I just don't see how he can work in this set of circumstances. This is where providence comes in. He says, if we go back, we take a brief glimpse of the past, this will assure us that God is amply able to supply the needs of his people. It also assures us that great people of the past fully trusted in his providence. When we think about providence, it in some respects is a little similar, I guess, to people who are not Christians. If you have a non-Christian, he or she goes to the hospital, do they expect to recover from the surgery? I think most people do. Otherwise, he'd probably not have the surgery. So what's the difference between that non-Christian who's looking at a serious surgery and expects to recover from it, and the Christian who's trying to serve God and believes that God's going to help? All right, you have hope. That's going to be one of the big differences. Anything else?
Sometimes we still pray for them people.
Okay, that would be another point that we would want to make. If you are the non-Christian going under the surgical procedure, no one is praying for you, what's your best shot at recovery? It's pretty much a luck of the draw, isn't it? You're hoping that all the circumstances line up. You really don't have anything beyond that. But for the Christian, when we think about that individual going through surgery, providence, you've got the hope there, plus the providence. What does providence do as far as offering additional help?
Help see you through.
All right, it's going to help see you through it. And as we think about God, he's behind the circumstances. He knew that long before the surgery came up that this was going to arrive. So he is, as we'll see from some Old Testament examples tonight, in a case of surgery, able to make sure that the right people are in the right place at the right time. You're in the right place to have the right medical facility and the right treatment, and everything just lines up. People say sometimes today, well, everything just lined up. Sometimes that happens because people just seem to have good fortune. But for the Christian, this is something that God is actively involved in when it comes to helping his people. He mentioned Genesis 8, verse 22. Would anybody like to start off with that particular passage? Read it for us. Genesis 8, verse 22, Scott. And then we'll get our second helper lined up. And that should come from Acts 14, 17. That'll be their second one. All right, Betty. And then our third one's going to be Matthew 5, 45. All right, Lois. Let's start with Genesis 8, 22.
While the earth remains, seed time and harvest, cold and heat, summer and winter, day and night shall not cease.
Okay. When we look at the passage, let's fill in the blanks. God, first of all, says, as long as what remains? Well, no. As long as the earth remains. As long as the earth is in existence. Then we have our answers. First one is going to be seed time. There's always going to be a time to plant. Regardless of how long the earth exists, God says people, farmers, gardeners, they will have the opportunity to plant seeds. And in addition to planting, God says what else will continue?
Harvest.
So the cycle that we've seen for, throughout our lives, God said it's always going to continue. Plus, there's always going to be cold and there's going to be heat. Well, that's interesting. Today, sometimes people talk about global warming and say, well, things are getting hot and this, that, and the other. And we, would not dispute, at least biblically, that there can be some changes in temperature. But what's the Bible promise? With that heat, there's also going to be some cold. So do not expect that that's simply going to one day vanish. And then God also said there's going to be summer, there's going to be winter, and some of those cycles may be a little warmer or a little cooler, depending on how things go. Plus, there will always be day and night. Now, are these things that God does miraculously? No. I mean, day and night, summer, winter, he set up the seasons, and he works in such a way where all of these things work together. And one of the things I think that we can draw from tonight's lesson, draw from the material, and this will be a little more evident as we go by, especially as you look at the Old Testament. If God is working providentially, and he's got this cycle of nature, do you think he can use that cycle to bless people, or more specifically nations, as well as curse nations?
Sure.
Yeah. You think about Elijah? I mean, in that case, I think you'd have to put that in the miraculous category. No rain for 3 years. But when we think about God, he is overall, and that includes the weather.
Sometimes thinking about, is there a difference when you talk, I think it's providence, in that there was manna. They needed something to eat, he dropped manna from heaven. That's providence there, he's providing. That's a miracle.
Yes.
Spain and eat right away.
Yes.
Would there be a difference between that and you've got the resources to plant seeds and grow bread or food, but you've got to work and do it? Is there a difference there?
Yes, a great question. When you think about provision.
I see a difference.
Yes, when you think about provision there, the manna, that was something that instantaneous, and God certainly provided it for his people. Yes, it is. And when we think about that today, if you think about Jesus healing people, there were times where he healed folks instantaneously, a miracle. But there were some other things as far as, if we take it to our day and time, providential healing. If you're sick, are you probably going to fare very well if you're not willing to go to the doctor in the hospital? Probably not. I mean, if you need surgery and you don't get it, you're probably not going to have either a long life or much life left in you. But when we think about that person who goes to the doctor, providence would say for the Christian what's going to happen. You're going to find the right doctor at the right time. The test was done at the right time, in the right way, and everything lines up. One footnote to that is that when we think about providence, and we think about life, is providence going to exclude us or keep us from every difficulty? No. We are still people. We still face the difficulties that are associated with this life. But providence is God's overriding hand. When we pray about things, providence is going to be the way that he helps us. And sometimes that help is going to cause us to have some involvement in the process. So Steve was exactly right in the thought that he offered. Harvey?
Just going back to the seed harvest, stop and think about it, how when our seasons change, how the days get longer, and finally we've got the longest day of the year, then it all lines up every year, it seems. It's just over and over. It's all tuned in, I guess I would say.
Yeah. And you do find that God made some adjustments, if you will, at various times, and he did various things. Sometimes the nation was afflicted with war. Sometimes the nation was afflicted in various ways weather-wise. I mean, they still got rain, but it wasn't as much as they needed. It was a drought, or the reverse can
summer.
Right, and the reverse can take place, where you get too much rain and the crops wash out. One of the things I think that our nation has forgotten or no longer believes is that God rules in the affairs of men. A lot of people no longer believe that. But when we look at the Bible, especially the area of providence, God does. And much of that control, or a great deal of that authority, is exercised in the area of providence. You know, he could just blanket the U.S. in a snowstorm for 365 days out of the year and bury us. I mean, he could make us, you know, miraculously, but that's not the way he's operating today. He's operating providentially. So that hand is behind the scenes in a lot of ways. Acts 14:17. Okay, first blank, God gives us rain. Second blank, or second set of blanks, he also gives us fruitful seasons. Well, the secularists would say, where do we get the rain from? Not God, it's just the natural cycle of things. Right, and that's, once again, God, he set up this natural process, he has the power, the ability, and he still works within these things to either bless people or cause people to rethink some things. And there are times where, as we'll see from Matthew 5:45, that even some unrighteous people are blessed by what he does.
In order that you may be sons of your Father who is in heaven, for he causes his sun to rise on the evil and the good, and sends rain on the righteous and the unrighteous.
All right, our blanks. God causes the sun to rise on the evil as well as the good, and sends rain on the just as well as the unjust. God's providence, intended for his people, but sometimes non-Christians are also blessed. We have at various times prayed for non-Christians here. Other Christians will pray for non-Christians, that they'll be able to get through a surgery successfully, that they'll be able to get a job, that you know, no problems will be associated with some set of circumstances in their life. But primarily, God's providence is for his people, but it's not always exclusively for them. Anything that you want to add or ask before we pick up with section 2? All right, in the second section, we have Leviticus 25, verses 20 to 22. A volunteer, Leviticus 25. All right, Scott. And across the page, we will then have somebody pick up Leviticus 26, 3 through 7. Brian, you want to take care of that one? Thank you. Leviticus 25, verses 20 through 22. Verses 20 through 22.
Okay. And if you say, what shall we eat in the seventh year, if we may not sow or gather our crop? I will command my blessing on you in the sixth year, so that it will produce a crop sufficient for 3 years. When you sow in the eighth year, you will be eating some of the old crop. You shall eat the old until the ninth year when the crop arrives.
Thank you. Now this, if you go back and you look at the information that's being discussed here, it's the year of Jubilee. God had some plans. For example, in that seventh year, the land was to lie in a state of rest. God said, you don't need to go out and you know, do any farming. You can just let the land lie dormant. Well, God's people, when they heard that, what were they thinking? God said, don't go out and plant in the seventh year. What are we going to eat? I mean, if you are people who are used to agricultural life, and you're not out planting, I mean, you're the farmer, you don't plant, you know, crops that year, you're thinking, we're going to get hungry. So that's the very question. God said, if ye shall say, what shall we eat in the seventh year? Well, what was God's answer?
Then the crop in the sixth year will be sufficient.
All right. Year seven, the land is supposed to rest, but God said the year before you get to that, you know, that seventh year, that sixth crop, if you were to put that in other language today, what would it be? All right, it's going to be a bumper crop. God said you're going to have such an abundance, it's going to carry you through for an extended period of time. You're not going to have to worry about the seventh year. You're not going to have to worry about the eighth year. You're going to have more than enough. Top of the next page, 51, you're going to have fruit for how many years? 3 years. And ye shall sow the eighth year and eat of the old fruit until the ninth year. It was a great promise. But this is precisely the kind of promise that people today struggle with. God makes a promise in his word. We'll look at one a little bit later in Matthew chapter 6. And even though that promise is made, do people struggle with faith?
Yeah.
As we said, that's really where the rubber meets the road. People wonder, well, does God really have the power to do it? How can God do this? I can't see how God can possibly accomplish this in my life. What's God's answer to us? Have faith. It may seem like you're getting closer and closer and closer to the edge. And each day, things may not seem to be getting any better. They may seem to get worse. Yet, as you are on that particular journey, each day, what's God's message? Have faith. Trust me. Believe me. Well, when we're talking about providence, it's a little more difficult because we think, well, if God were doing miracles today, bang, he could just out of the blue do that. But remember how we've described providence up to this far, up to this point? We've got God. He's above time. So as he's watching the events, he knows what's going to take place. He knows the last minute that we've got to get something accomplished, get something done. And because he's a good, a benevolent, a loving God, he's got a plan in place. We simply have to have faith that he's going to see us through it. But this is where a lot of people really, really struggle. The prophet Habakkuk realized this, and Paul picked this up in the book of Romans. Remember that statement? We've talked about it before in classes and sermons. The just or the righteous shall live by faith. Now, it took me a long time to figure out that statement. I struggled with that statement for about 30 years. But now, I think I've got a little bit better understanding of what Paul is saying. Everything that's associated with the Christian life, anything that you can name is somehow associated with faith. When we assemble here to worship God, have we ever seen him? No. Can't smell him. No picture of him. Can't feel him. But we worship him by faith. We didn't see Jesus die on the cross. But because of the evidence that we have, we accept that by faith. When we pray, there's no verbal answer back. God's not sending any special feeling to us, but we pray by faith. Everything that we can associate with the Christian life, it is somehow tied in with the subject of faith. So God's people had to have that under the Old Testament. We have to have that under the New. Hebrews 11:6, remember? Without faith, we cannot please God. It's impossible to please God. It's a tough, tough lesson to learn in the Christian life. We want to be self-sufficient. We don't want... And Paul, remember too, he said we walk by faith and not by sight. But for us as human beings, what do we want to walk by? We want to walk by sight. We want to see the money in the bank. We want to be able to say, this is it. I have this in place. But God says, you've got to learn to trust me. Anybody in school ever do that little trust game? Somebody stands behind you. You can't see him. And they just say, fall back. Trust me. Well, that'll scar you for life. But when we think about that, there is that uncertain factor. I mean, is this guy going to be a prankster? Is he going to be physically able to catch me and so forth? And it really takes some faith to just let yourself go and fall back. But that's what God is saying. If you have done your part, if you you're doing my will, you trust me. Be willing to fall back. Be willing to rely on me. But it is a tough, tough thing. And my judgment is that a lot of people, they go through the Christian life and they never do very well with that. And God understands that, but still that's something that we want to work on. Anything that you want to add or ask before we pick up with Leviticus 26?
Little children.
Sure. I think that's part of it. Because when you look at a child, hey, Dad, this needs done. And to them, I don't know how he's going to do it. I really don't care how he's going to do it. But it's my dad. He can do anything in the world. But when we get to be adults, and we've got the perfect father who has all power, then all of a sudden we think, well, we've wised up, and we just, So, and that, I think, is one of the key reasons why Jesus made that particular point. So once again, a great cross-reference from Matthew 18. Anybody else? Brian, let's pick up Leviticus 23, or 26, rather, verses 3 through 7. Thank you.
If you walk in my statutes and keep my commandments and do them, then I will give you rain in due season, and the land shall yield or increase, and the trees of the field shall yield their fruit, and your threshing shall reach unto the vintage, and the vintage shall reach unto the sowing time, and you shall eat your bread to the full, and dwell in your land safely, and I will give peace in your land, and you shall lie down, and none shall make you afraid, and I will rid evil beasts out of the land,
neither shall the sword go through your hand. And you shall chase your enemies, and they shall fall before you by the sword.
Thank you. Let's fill in our blanks. God said, I'll give you rain when? In due seasons. What's he mean by that? The rain's going to come at the right time. Well, today we have, if you look at what we have here and you think about our nation, it's like night and day. Our nation today is worried about, like I say, you know, global warming and how that's going to affect the rain, this, that, and the other thing. But when you look at Israel as a nation, God said, I will take care of you. But you've got to be willing to fall back. You've got to be willing to rely on me instead of try to be self-sufficient. We've done things in the complete reverse, and it just doesn't fare very well for people individually or as a nation when they want God's blessings. He said the land is going to yield her fruit.
Increase.
All right, it's going to increase. The trees of the field shall yield their fruit. The threshing is going to reach unto the vintage. The vintage shall reach unto the sowing time, and ye shall eat your bread to the full and dwell in your land safely. I'm going to give you peace, you're going to lie down, and none shall make you afraid. And the evil beasts, they're going to be removed from the land, and neither shall the sword. Now, quick point here, as far as the Revelation study on Sunday mornings. He says the sword's not going to go through your land. What's he mean by that? Think he's talking about a literal sword?
War.
Oh, he's talking about war. So there's a symbol there. There's a figurative. So hopefully with that study in Revelation, we're a little more attuned to symbolism. The sword's not going to go through your land, and ye shall chase your enemies, and they're going to fall before you by the sword. God said, if you rely on me, things are going to go well. When we look at our nation, up until about 50 years ago, there was a great interest in God, and we had some difficulties at times as far as the nation, but we were really blessed. Now as we look at our nation, what do we find? Anybody see the teachers protesting in Chicago today? There's a bunch of them. They're talking about closing schools. Anybody see the information about Stockton, California? Talking about bankruptcy there? You know, when you talk about a nation where cities are going bankrupt, they're having to close schools and some other things, it sure doesn't sound like they're being blessed by God. In the midst of all this, what do we find our Supreme Court taking up? All right, same-sex marriages. When you look at what the Bible says about that kind of activity, Genesis 19, how enthused was God about same-sex relationships? He wiped them out. So today people would say, well, you know, it's just a great coincidence that on the one hand we've got all this stuff taking place as far as moral views and, you know, economic disasters over here. Biblically, in the Old Testament, you see a clear connection between the two. And God's prophets in the Old Testament, they consistently called his people back to righteous living, and when they refused to do that, things did not go well. God does not change, as the prophet Malachi said, and you know, if we really need national repentance. Anything before we pick up with point C? Scott?
I think we've had a lot of struggle with faith, though, even Moses. I mean, after everything we saw, you know, the people of Israel were going to be destroyed, and they were promised, even in the Red Sea, that all of them participated.
Yeah. It is a constant battle for people. And it's not just faith. When you think about thankfulness, anybody ever have a situation where someone was really assisted or helped maybe by you? How long did the appreciation last? Yeah. By tomorrow, in many cases, they've forgotten about it. They've gone on to other stuff. People have, and Steve has made this point at various times at the Lord's table, and it's a good point. We are people, how do you say that? Of short memories or forgetful people? Okay. Well, that's a great point, because we are forgetful people. When it comes to thankfulness, when it comes to faith, and just all the other. I've heard preachers say, I preached on love this morning, and then you go out and look at the parking lot, and we got some folks scrapping over where they're going to have lunch at. Well, you know, hey, what about that information from the Bible 15 minutes ago? Have you forgotten about that? Brotherly kindness and so forth. So, you know, that's one of the reasons that we try to go back and look at some of these old truths from time to time. Anybody else before we pick up with Deuteronomy? Okay, let's get three helpers here. First two are based on Deuteronomy. Deuteronomy 2:7. Who'd like to take that one, Harvey? After that, Deuteronomy 29:5. All right, Scott. And then we'll head over to the book of Nehemiah and look at chapter 9. Nehemiah 9, verse 25. Steve, thank you. Deuteronomy 2, verse 7.
For the Lord thy God hath blessed thee in all the works of thy hands. He knoweth thy walking through this great wilderness. 40 years, the Lord thy God has been with thee, thou hast lacked nothing.
Now, this is an incredible statement. How many years are being described?
40
years. God said during this period, and we're dealing with a lot of people, not just a family or not just, you know, 10 or 20 families or 100 families, with an entire nation, God said for 40 years, what did you people lack? Not a single thing. That's a pretty impressive track record. It's that same God today that says to his people, I want to help you. But what do you need to have in me? You've got to have faith. This is, I think, one of the reasons why the Old Testament was written. So we can go back and we can look at these stories and we can see that God has been tested. He's been checked out in all kinds of circumstances, and every single time he's come through successful. So this God, who has a track record that's thousands of years long, success after success, no failures, says, trust me. And our response to that needs to be, okay, we will. Deuteronomy 29, verse 5. I'm not sure that God changed their fashions, but at least we know this much about their clothing and their shoes. They didn't wear out. Now, I don't know what the quality was. I doubt that it was anything like what we have today. But imagine clothing that doesn't wear out after 40 years. Shoes. 40 years later. Not because they were stuck in the closet somewhere or well-preserved, but you're wearing these shoes day after day for 40 years, and they're still as good after the 40-year mark as they were the day we put them on. That's the God that we serve. That's the God who says, I have the power to help you. Not only that miraculous power that the Bible talks about from time to time, but the providential power to work within natural law, to work within the circumstances of life, to see that his people receive what they need. We've developed this in other lessons, but I think it merits it merits some attention tonight. When God says, I'm going to help you providentially, let's say, for example, we'll let you pick. A crisis, 30 days out. It feels like at that point you're going to fall off the cliff. What illustration do you want to use for that? At the end of 30 days, what bad thing is going to happen?
You're going to have surgery.
Okay. All right. Well, let's...
Your job.
All right, let's use the job. That's going to be an easier one to use. Thank you for both. 30 days, your job's going to be toast. Based on what we've said as far as God's providence... Does he have the power to help you secure a new employment? Okay. Now, as a person is praying, they'd like to think that, well, God has heard my prayer. 30 days out, we'll just say it's the 1st of March, looking at the end of March. We'll say March 30th. I think March has 31 days, but just overlook that. 30th of March. For us, we would like to think that God's going to answer that prayer when? In March. Yeah. Well, I'd like to think he's going to answer March 1st or 2nd.
So you don't have to sweat it.
Yes. Exactly right. But that takes me back to what we talked about earlier. We like to walk by sight instead of faith. Now, if I get the job by March 1st or 2nd, not much is involved there as far as faith. I mean, I'm notified today, no job at the end of the month. I get a new job tomorrow. Okay, no big deal. Thanks, God. But what happens is those days march by. The first week is gone. Second week is now gone. There's where faith and doubt really begin to be challenged. And as I said earlier, that's where the rubber starts to meet the road. 3 weeks out, 27 days out, 28 days out, 29 days out. You think God may let some people get out to about day 28 or 29? Maybe day 30? 4:59 and the phone rings? When we go back and we look at the Bible, we find oftentimes that God is a God who acts in the nick of time. Now, to me, that is not the most pleasurable place to be. I would really prefer to be there on March 1st. You know, deliver me soon, rather than let me get out to the end of the diving board, and it looks like I'm hanging on with two fingers. Scott mentioned Moses earlier. Can you imagine what the people in Israel were thinking? You've got the folks coming up behind you, and you get up to the sea. Well, it doesn't look like there's much in the way of deliverance at that point. I mean, it looks like they're finally going to be able to break through and kill you. You really... at that point, can't do much with the water. But God waited until that particular time to deliver people. You think about Jesus, the mother who lost her son. Do you remember where the Lord met that funeral procession? They're apparently not far from the grave. Some have suggested that the grave was actually in sight. Imagine the Lord timing things in such a way where it looks like maybe a few more steps, maybe two more minutes at the graveside, he intervenes at that particular moment. So when we think about God, we have to, once again, remember that he, in some respects, is the nick of time God, and we've got to have that faith. Anybody want to say anything before we pick up with Nehemiah 9? Okay, Nehemiah 9, verse 25.
And they took fortified cities and a fat land, possessed houses full of all good things, cisterns hewn out, vineyards and olive gardens, and fruit trees in abundance. So they did eat, and were filled, and became fat, and delighted themselves in thy great goodness.
The people who were in the land, the Canaanites, before God's people got there, God talks about the ancestors of the Hebrew people. He says they took what kinds of cities? Strong cities. And what kind of land? Fat land. Possessed houses full of all goods. There were wells that had been dug, vineyards, olive yards, and in abundance there were fruit trees, so they did eat. They were filled and became fat and delighted themselves in thy great goodness. God has the ability to help his people if they're willing to obey and willing to believe. Psalm 78 is next. Psalm 78, 51 through 55. You have a couple minutes to get there, Betty. And then we also have another passage on page 52, Psalm 103, verses 2 through 5. Psalm 103, verses 2 through 5. Scott. Betty, Psalm 78, verses 51 through 55, please. Our nation, as we look at it, is concerned about other nations. We look at Iran, we look at Afghanistan, we look at some of the things being done in North Korea, and people say, well, they've got bombs, or they've got nukes, or potentially they have nukes, and what are we going to do? Well, one of the things that should be done is trust in God. Now, Steve mentioned earlier, there is a basis for, Israel had an army. I don't know that you could make a case against national defense, but national defense should start with trust in God. And here, the people of Israel, God showed them just how effective he was as far as being offensive and defensive to them. He made his own people to go forth like sheep. Well, how well can a sheep fight? I mean, it can, headbutt you, but aside from that, it's not going to be able to do a whole lot of damage. So you have God's people. God is the one who's leading them out. He's the warrior. He's the one who's at the head of the pack, if you will. He guides them. As they're out there in the wilderness, he guides them like a flock. He leads them on safely. Sheep need that, and that's what happened to his people. They didn't fear, but the sea overwhelmed their enemies. So two distinct points here. God's people, he's caring for them. The enemies, he says, I'm going to take care of you. I'm going to eliminate you. This is precisely what he did. Top of page 52, first blank, the heathen were before them and divided them and inheritance by line and made the tribes of Israel to dwell in the tents. God gave his people everything that they needed and wanted to continue to do that, but there were various times, various periods of unbelief, and that was a problem for the Jews. Psalm 103, verses 2 through 5.
Bless the Lord, O my soul, and forget not all his benefits, who forgives all your iniquities, who heals all your diseases, who redeems your life from the pit, who crowns you with steadfast love and mercy, who satisfies you with good so that your youth is renewed like the eagles.
Before we start looking at the blanks, let's think about what was just read in view of a human parent. Imagine that you have a young child, and you make a promise to the child, and the child says, Dad, I don't think you can do that. Hurt? Or you could use a mom. I just don't think that you've got the power. I just don't think that you have enough care and love and concern for me that you're going to do that. All right, well, all right. Once, that's kind of painful. What about twice or five times? What about as this child continues to go through his or her life, he or she continues to make that point? I just don't think that you can deliver on your promises. How'd you feel as a parent? I think pretty, frustrated and pretty disgusted after a period of time. That's really what Israel did. You can go back very early in Hebrew history, the Red Sea and all of the other miracles. They had seen God deliver. They had seen God save and redeem, preserve, keep time after time. Yet, almost every little wrinkle that came up, what was the attitude towards God? He can't do it. Well, if we'd be, you know, frustrated by that as a parent, just think about God. Yet, even though the people did that to him time and time again, what do we find in the first blank? Who forgives how much? All thine iniquities. Well, that's a pretty great God. Today, is that not still true? When we struggle with unbelief, we can say, well, okay, God, you did deliver me. I didn't have a lot of faith, but I'm sorry about that. What's the message to us? God says, I know you're frail. Well, that's good that we have forgiveness, but is there a second lesson there? We talk about learning from our mistakes. There should be a little more faith in our life when we deal with another circumstance and say, God, I learned from the last one. It's going to be a little difficult for me to believe that you can help in this set of circumstances, but you've got a good track record biblically. You've got a good track record in my life, and I do believe that you can aid in this set of circumstances, and we're just going to wait it out and see if it goes all the way to the end, but I believe you can help me. Who heals all thy diseases, who redeems thy life from destruction, who crowns thee with loving kindness and tender mercy, who satisfies thy mouth with good things so that thy youth is renewed like the eagles. Once again, all statements to describe how God was going to bless his people. Before we start dealing with some of the characters, anything that you'd like to interject? Okay, let's pick up with some information about Abraham. He talks about Hebrews 11, verse 8, and then we also have Genesis 22, 8, and then Hebrews 11, verse 19. Hebrews 11, 8. We'd like to take care of that one. Hebrews 11, 8, Harvey. And after that, we'll look in the book of Genesis, the 22nd chapter, verse 8, Scott. And then number 3 is going to be Hebrews 11, verse 19. Brian. Let's start with Hebrews 11, verse 8.
By faith, Abraham, when he was called, go out into the place where which he should after receive for his inheritance, obeyed and went out, not knowing whither he went.
Okay. A lot of people think that Abraham was a great man, and he was. I mean, he was going to be the father of many nations, and, you know, Christ ultimately comes, through his family line and so forth. What was the one thing, though, that really stands out about him? What did he have?
Faith.
Well, if we want to be really pleasing to God, what do we need? We've got to have faith. And as we've said several times, that is a challenging, challenging thing for God's people. The writer goes on to say, after mentioning this passage, faith, of course, is what we want in that first blank. When he was called upon to later offer his son as a sacrifice, he submitted to the command, and when Isaac asked, where is the lamb for the burnt offering? Abraham replied, Genesis 22:8. Let's get the answer.
Abraham said, God will provide for himself the lamb for the burnt offering of his son.
Imagine that. Where is this going to come from? You can imagine maybe Abraham, or at least Isaac, looking around, we're out here and I don't see any animals. Where's it going to come from? And this man said, God is going to provide it. Can you imagine the effect that a parent would have on a child? Child asks that question to mom and dad, or it may not be that exact question, but asks a question, and the parent says, I don't know, but I do know this. Who will hear our prayer? God. Who do we need to turn to for help? God. Who do we need to have faith in? God. Let's trust him. And then, assuming that that prayer is answered with a yes, you think that would have a positive impact on the child? Should, for a long time. And if that's how parents try to deal with circumstances in life, it can really be a powerful and great influence on their offspring. Hebrews 11, verse 19.
Accounting that God was able to raise him up even from the dead, from whence also we received him in the figure.
Okay, our blanks. God was able to raise him up even from the dead. Now that's a lot of faith. You think about this dad, waited for a son for a long time, finally has a son, the promised son, and his conviction is, even if his life is taken, God's able to raise him from the dead. Most people will probably never come to that level of faith in this life, and it wouldn't be exactly the same, but still, to have that kind of great confidence in God. But we do need, I think, a mark. There has to be a bar for us to shoot for as far as faith, and Abraham is one good example of a high bar as we think about faith in our life. Anybody else want to offer something on Abraham? Okay, he talks about Joseph. We should be able to deal with him as well. He takes us back to Genesis chapter 45, verses 5 through 7. Has anybody turned back there by chance and is ready to read? All right, Scott.
Joseph
45, verses 5 through 7.
And now, do not be distressed or angry with yourselves because you sold me here. For God sent me before you to preserve life. For the famine has been in the land these last 2 years, and there are yet 5 years in which there will be neither plowing nor harvest. And God sent me before you to preserve for you the remnant on earth, alive that you have many survivors. So it was not you who sent me there, but God. He has made me the father to Pharaoh and lord of all the house, the ruler over all the land of Egypt. Hurry and go up to my father and say to him, thus says your son Joseph, God has made me lord of all Egypt. Come down to me, do not tarry. You shall dwell in the land of Goshen, and you shall be near me.
Okay.
Your children and your children's children and your flocks and herds and all that you have.
Okay, thank you. He mentions, before we get to Genesis 45, imagine the heartache, the frustration of being sold by your brothers into a strange land. A lot of people today, if they had anything that was remotely similar to this experience, what would their attitude be? I think absolute resentment, hate, anger, it would just burn at them day after day. Think of how they treated me. I can't wait to get back at them. Let me come up with some kind of scheme. Let me come up with some kind of way that eventually I can pay them back, maybe even kill them. One of the brothers, he mentions, Genesis 42, verse 21, reminded the others that they had seen the anguish of Joseph's soul when he besought us and we would not hear. Imagine begging for help, pleading with your family members, and they're not willing to aid you. Yet, in spite of all those difficult circumstances, it would have been easy for him at that point, easy for people today, to say, well, I cried out to God. If he loved me, it wouldn't have happened in the first place, but I beg to be released from this set of circumstances. He's not helped me. As we continue to look at Joseph's life, we find that he experienced multiple difficulties, and a lot of people would have turned from God. But as he persists in faith, eventually, how did he feel about some things? Genesis 45, verses 4 through 7, or 45, 5 to 7. He basically says, you intended it for evil, but God intended it for good. Was that obvious at the time? No. It took a while for him to sort through all that stuff. Then you see the other benefit of faith here as well. That faith that kept him going, and there, he had to have some dark days. It had to be very difficult at times. But he maintained that faith, and then when you get on the other side of the difficulty, you look back and you think, what? All right, God really is a good God. He's not necessarily going to keep me from every hardship, but he will see me through all these difficult times if I have faith. That takes us back to Habakkuk 2. The just shall live by faith. Faith is easy when times are good. But when times get challenging, that's where people will throw in the towel. God doesn't love me, and all the other messages that the devil would like us to believe. So faith is that critical thing. If we're going to be on the Lord's side, we've got to have faith.